good evening, everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters is a show interviewing various people who are making a difference in the collective consciousness at this time on our planet. We hear it's the time of the great shift. My Paradigm Shifter today is Rowena Kreider, who is amazing, bringing together, what would we say, the sound, light, color, all the connections that we can make through various levels in the universe and this dimension in which we live. Well, let's just let you explain it, Rowena. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Veronica.
That's a rather complicated interview or introduction, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
So you seem to, maybe all of your life, you have seen what, symbolism and connection in things in the third dimension, is that right?
Well, I don't know that at two I was seeing symbols, but...
I'll bet you were.
Maybe so, but I don't remember. But, actually I think symbolism comes in at a certain level of maturity. It doesn't mean that the soul isn't mature at birth, but it isn't necessarily connected to mind to be able to recognize it. But symbols, it isn't sometimes symbols really as direct experience with color, sound, movement, and form.
You mean that you experience?
Symbols suggest once removed or a doorway to somewhere else.
So let's go back to then sound, color, and so on. Now, synesthesia is something I learned about when I was studying French poetry, and I have it. And it's something that they say you can study it, learn it, and become an intuitive. Do you know about that?
Well, I'm sure people are intuitive anyway, but that would help develop it. Synesthesia, if people don't know, is like seeing when you listen to music, hearing a sound, even a bird sound, may evoke an image, and vice versa, seeing colors, seeing a painting, may evoke a symphony or music within your own psyche. And it goes with sense and seeing of forms as well. So it's a very wonderful capacity. That's something that happens in the mind. The brain is set up for it, but the mind and brain are not really the same thing.
What do you mean the brain is set up for it? Because the brain is like a computer. You mean it can handle the data? It can, to me anyway.
Well, the mind is set up for it. The brain receives what the mind knows. I see the mind as on a different realm, even a different dimension than brain. Brain is a three-dimensional organic body. But when we die, we still have our mind. We don't have our brain.
Mm-hmm. So we're a little lighter and freer. So I want to go back to the synesthesia, because when I look at your books and your divination cards, and you're an amazing, amazing producer of connections and links between senses and symbols from the third dimension, all kinds of dimensions. So, of course, that throws me back to synesthesia, which to me means I hear colors, I hear, and I see sounds and so on and so forth. Are they... Okay, so if we're multidimensional beings, maybe I should just ask you what you think multidimension is, and is the connection of symbols and light and sound, are these ways of getting us connected to consciously to different dimensions?
Yes, I think so. When people observe a beautiful yellow, pink, blue flower, they need to realize that the color goes all the way through to more source realms. By source, I'm meaning higher dimensions.
I love that. You just said that. That just made
you
my
know,
body...
And so the same with sound, and that's why these are universal languages. They're not just sensorial dependent. They're not just dependent on eyes and ears. It's the mind, and the mind is multidimensional.
I was just going to ask you that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a wonderful, wonderful thought. So it's like our experience which is a sensing experience, is actually multidimensional when we...
Yes.
Oh, well, that's wonderful.
That's why we need, you know, like I'd love to see kids just appreciate nature and be in nature, because nature is multidimensional. We think of it as sensorial and just hunks of things. So when people cut down trees and carry them on a truck, they appear to them to be just objects, you know, hunks of matter. But they are living beings, and this living beingness has its source in higher worlds.
Hmm.
That's what I mean by multidimensional. How do I know that? I don't know how to say, because I really trust that we can know all kinds of things without necessarily scientific so-called objective proof, because objectivity is an illusion.
Mm-hmm. But we're kind of, what did I hear in the last interview that we did? Something like, we do get confined by this dimension, and that does give us kind of a relative style in a way, or it does kind of make us think and add things up in a specific way, doesn't it? Like,
well, the space-time dimension is a wonderful school. And in a way, everything can be read as a symbol. A tree, for example, would become a symbol when it relates to, let's say, the archetype of the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that tree of life then relates to mythologies, to religions, as well as Darwin's evolutionary tree.
So let me just spiral us into, say, a person seeking soul purpose can use symbols like trees to,
yes,
to what? I can't quite put it. It's sort of like spiral into who you really are and a oneness with the tree that can bring you kind of home with yourself. Would you say?
That's a good way to put it. I happen to believe that there is an archetypal realm. Archetype means primary pattern. That is in higher dimensions. In other words, the mind, the heart mind knows it. So the tree of life is one of the archetypes that some souls may resonate with. There are others, like the divine eye, the emerald tablet, the cosmic vortex. There are many different names. There are the black cube, as in Islam, the Kaaba. There are different archetypes that different soul groups resonate to, and in that sense, soul purpose can be discovered more through them.
You said different soul groups, So you mean it has some effect on the way a third dimensional grouping, perhaps a religious group or, I don't know, some kind of...
Well, that's true, because even though a given soul may change religions from lifetime to lifetime, nevertheless, it's very common that souls repeat a certain religion or cultural milieu. And some souls, though, jump all over the place and don't reincarnate with the same soul group. For example, Tibetans, many Islamic or Christian peoples tend to repeat. I happen to be one that I think jumps all over the place.
But let's talk a bit about soul purpose, because... Mm-hmm. In your purpose, if you're kind of a one who can reach through the different pools of convention in order to work with the symbols and the multidimensionality of it all, you'd have to be able to shift in and out of the different archetypal pools, wouldn't you?
Yes. I think the more flexibility, the better. And eventually, I would see religions actually dissolving. And that sounds really outrageous to some people. But I'm talking about religions as social conventions, not their archetypal meaning. So the archetypal meaning can remain constant, but it's not necessarily turned into a social convention. So, for example, certain rituals in a given religion, some may touch souls and some may just be social repetition, habits. And especially at this time of radical change.
It is a time of radical change, isn't it?
That kind of thing is up for transformation, as well as individual habits that aren't relevant to soul purpose.
So what do you think the journey of humanity is? This is like asking what is reality, but what do you think is the journey that we're on? Does it come to an end? Is it an infinite exploration? Are we like the 12 tribes and having 12 different styles of archetypal exploration for transformation? What do you
see? Those are big questions.
I know you can handle them.
No, the big journey is what interests me a lot, and that's what a lot of my work has repeatedly done. The Tree of Life film, many different things. Tell a story of creation, first out of so-called nothing, which is really the plenum, which is the fullness, everything, potentially. And in other words, all the creation stories and myths, and including physics models. So then human beings are, in my view, conceived by prime source first, but evolve last. So creation to me is not contradictory to evolution. So once human beings exist, we have this role of acknowledging that all of nature is within us. It's part of our unconscious and our autonomic nervous system and so forth.
You mean that to be one with all of it? Is that what you mean?
Well, we are one with all of it, even physically, because nature is incorporated in our bodies. But anyway, to answer the bigger question of where are we going, or what is the big story, it is to return to source through consciousness, through big mind, you could say. But it isn't a big absorption of losing your individuality or soul purpose. It's through expressing soul purpose. So if people don't express their unique soul purpose and just imitate someone else, it doesn't count as anything. It's not really part of the journey. And I don't think there's any end to it. In other words, answer your second part of your question. You know, it goes on and on and on.
So you don't think we're just headed to being one with the ultimate source, or...
No, there are multitudes of ways of doing that, and then for example, think of the archangels who are already capable of being one with Source, but they don't stop there. They assist humanity and nature in the whole scheme. So there's all kinds of ways of being of service. And to the whole, the main thing is to identify with the whole, not just one's individual ego.
So,
in other words, to help nature, if we really knew that nature was part of our body, we wouldn't be destroying it.
And what's the way to develop that? Is it happening now? It seems that there are people who are really in communion with nature more consciously than ever before.
Well, I hope so. I don't really have a way to evaluate that.
I guess none of us
know.
Do.
The evidence on the planet is that we're creating rack and ruin for nature. I mean, more and more is being destroyed.
Well, I think there's something about the rate at which that's happening and the rate at which people are waking up.
That's true. Yeah. People are waking up now. Mm-hmm. There's a green movement. But that doesn't mean that people are really understanding that they are one with nature. In other words, nature is part of their body. It's kind of like nature is an unconscious stream that streams into us and into our unconscious self. That is, our body, for the most part, is unconscious. We may be conscious of our body, but most of what goes on, heartbeat, autonomic nervous system, and so forth, we don't control consciously.
Yeah, we don't make a plan on that most of the time. Mm-hmm.
Well, very few people have control on that level. Mm-hmm. Some yogis do, and it becomes possible. But the point is that nature is really one with us. And so if we really fully knew that, as children would know if they really commune deeply with nature and loved it. You know, I think it's natural if you get to know nature as a child that you love it. Yeah. If you don't get to know nature as a child, you often fear it. I've known many people in the cities who are afraid of nature.
Yeah, I think I had a bit of that being a bit of a city kid.
Uh-huh.
Tell me this, how do we raise children into their soul purpose? Because we're talking about our purpose, and if we're into consciousness about our own personal soul journey, wouldn't we have more of an involvement with nature and understanding and a love of it?
Well, I hope so, but the main thing, a way of detecting whether you're living your soul purpose is whether you have intrinsic joy.
Hmm.
Because I feel it's the natural state of human beings to be ecstatic, joyful, happy. You might look around and say, well, no, that doesn't seem to be so.
It certainly isn't in fashion.
But I think it's the natural state.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's been obscured by eons of conditioning and fear and manipulation, and people are trying to please someone else and get approval and all reasons to deviate from soul purpose.
And everything then becomes kind of like our identity relative to everyone else's expectation of us or something, and rather than an association with nature and the unfoldment of life.
Yes, and almost any expectation is a difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really thwarts things, doesn't it?
It does.
Well,
because it limits the possibilities, and then you expect something of your partner, and vice versa. It becomes a demand and a drain, and it doesn't keep the possibilities open.
So what do you call consciousness?
Consciousness.
Well, let's explain consciousness to our listeners. Well, because we always, all of us, use this term, and I'm going, I think, well, anyway, I'd love your perspective.
Well, it's the activity of mind. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about mind, I'm talking about big mind,
mm-hmm.
but also our mind is part of big mind. I don't know what else to call it. And when we're able to tune into mind in its purer sense, it is not covered over with conditioning. And that sense, I don't know if your listeners are related, you know, familiar with Plato, but I am rather Platonic in that sense of the archetypal mind realm being in a higher dimension, and basically what we have here in three dimensions is a display that he called shadows.
Oh, okay. And so we're kind of living in the shadows, are we, according to that?
According to that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, on a computer analogy, it's the display.
Hmm. Well, that's very good, actually. But consciousness itself is that...
is the activity of mind.
And the awareness, right?
The
awareness into that rather than the expectation or the comparison or the...
Yeah.
Would that be it?
Yeah. You know, there's certain... consciousness can go many ways. It can be judgmental and have expectations and so forth. But if we're talking about coming into pure mind, we're moving in the direction of source, which is free. The whole point of finding soul purpose is to get free of conditioning that is unwanted.
Hmm. I heard recently a wonderful thing, which was, you get into trouble as soon as you say, I am whatever.
Uh-huh.
But if you just say, I am,
uh-huh.
you're kind of freer to be on your way to be in...
That's a good way of putting it.
And I noticed so your website is I Am, right?
Identifications limit who we are.
And limit the potential unfoldment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's potential unfoldment that's the key. And that's the key to creativity. And creativity is naturally ecstatic, and we are potentially naturally ecstatic. That's why people want drugs and alcohol. They want ecstasy, but those methods just create more obscurations to it.
Yeah, they just, yes. So I love to go back to children all the time, and I love what you say about children. So getting to me anyway, one of my big dreams, and I haven't done much about this, to be honest, is to help children grow up into their soul purpose, and that is so rare in our education system.
Well, that's very important, and that's one of my interests, too, and it's, in fact, rather primary. I feel, ultimately, a lot of my work will somehow help children find their joy, you know. I've created 12 science mandalas that I would love children to learn from. It doesn't mean that they don't discover on their own, but at the same time, I think we can have model possibilities for them to explore with.
I have the images right here, which I printed off your website, Creative Harmonics.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't gone in to read them all, but they're very beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about how that might impact them?
Well, children, I think, are interested in flowers, plants. I mean, if they have any experience with nature,
mm-hmm.
animals, like what are atoms, what's the subatomic realm, what are stars. So there are mandalas on each of these, as well as culture and humans and animals and ecology. And each one is based on a 12-fold functions. And these 12-fold functions are sort of basic qualitative differences. For example, the first position is the codes, what it is that is a gift from Prime Source as a design of the plant world, for example. That's a gift, you know. In fact, most of life is a gift, which we need to remember.
So that would be like the phi ratio or something?
Well, it's not. Oh, that's more the means by which it comes.
Oh, I see. I thought it was a basic intrinsic symbol of how it goes or something.
Well, uniquely the plant, for example, how did the idea of plant arise? We have to look at what plants do. Of course, they transform light into water and carbon dioxide, and plants transform soil. They mediate light and darkness. So it's mainly just understanding the function of different phenomena. That's why, in a way, it relates to science, but it isn't, you know, real hard-nosed about it.
Well, I sort of chuckle and go, well, it's sort of like the streams of wisdom that you talk about, isn't it? It's like watching how the wisdom moves through what would be a tree or a plant.
Yeah.
And how it has its own wisdom, and children could glean that, couldn't they?
Yes, and then they look at rocks and crystals and see that there are many facets. I mean, there are certain colors, there are certain hardnesses, there are certain lattice systems, certain geometries. It's just a way of learning about these things.
So a little guy could actually just perceive them and perceive the colors and have a lot of information coming from many...
Yeah, just the colors.
Yeah.
Different colors of birds, of different types of animals, of flowers and so forth. A huge amount of information. They could just look at the forms of things. How many different things have spirals or are spirals and multiple levels from electrons to galaxies? What do spirals do? They generate energy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a huge amount to learn just looking at these. There are 144 different patterns.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they can actually, I've got back to being a school teacher because I was one and you were one. I just see that they could then move accordingly or feel accordingly.
I'd actually like to put this information into a computer program or a multimedia way where they could interact with it. In other words, they could punch, for example, in the overview chart, they could punch star, say. They want to learn about stars. Then it would open up to a star 12-fold cycle. Then they may want to look just at the light of stars or the color of stars. They could go into that. So you could be
wonderful?
Specific as you want, you know, and yet always it's whole.
Hmm.
And that's the difference between modern education is that it's fragmented.
Mm-hmm. And yours is streams.
This method is always whole because you can always come back to the big picture and see its relationship to the big picture and then go into detail.
And I think what's fascinating with what you're saying is that I can feel in my body, you know, children do this all the time. You can feel knowingness, can't you? You can feel the consciousness of whatever you're teaching. So I think that would be a wonderful. So get that program going. That'd be great.
Well, I need other people or money or all kinds of things in order to make that possible.
Well, let's hold that that's
possible.
Because,
you know, I've created the scheme, which has taken many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
But I need technical people in order to fulfill it.
Well, let's just send it out there.
Yeah.
There's something I want to ask you about. It's almost a bit cheeky, I think, given the depth of your knowledge and so on. But have you seen Zeitgeist?
No.
It's an online movie. It's about a two-hour movie, which is a lot of people are being affected by it. And what it does is it brings together huge symbols and the plot, the theme that they're coming up with is that there has been a plan to induce a certain amount of limitation of humanity through the years through various symbols. And it debunks Jesus and it debunks this and debunks that. But it's pretty interesting on some levels.
Well, certainly there has been warlords and so forth, the secret government that has created fear for thousands of years. That's partly what we need to release. If that's what you're talking about.
It is really, because what it does is it opens that whole idea that it has been designed to create fear.
Yeah.
And a lot of the young people.
That's how people have been manipulated.
Right.
And so my workshop, for example, Surrendering to Source, which is coming up in July.
Oh, yeah. What are the dates of that?
It is July 16th to 22nd.
Okay.
It's designed to help people find soul purpose and to release conditioning that they observe that they no longer want, such as fear.
Mm-hmm.
this is a big pattern. It involves, in a way, personal alchemy, which is finding ways to burn through to the natural spiritual fire that we are, to acknowledge even the depths of our despair and depression so that we can get to the bottom of it. The idea is not to in any way separate from parts of ourselves that we have judged bad.
Mm.
We need to acknowledge those parts and bring them up to the surface and let them be a part of the whole so that they can be transformed.
Mm.
That's part of conditioning, is that parts of ourselves are kind of like animals that have been trained to behave in a certain way, which is very negative often, and they don't know anything different.
Mm-hmm.
So the technique here is not to reject them.
Mm-hmm.
That won't work. That just fragments the person more. But to bring them into a transformation where they get to be a part of something new.
Do you have to bring in past lives and all of that?
You may or may not. It isn't essential. You know, a lot of things come up just emotionally. You don't have to. In fact, I think people sometimes get stuck on, I was so-and-so, and I, you know, this and this happened. And then that creates a judgment and identification that limits the reality of the now.
Yeah, it's kind of that grasping thing of trying to categorize stuff as well.
Yeah, we don't need it, you know. Mm-hmm. The just let it come up and be released.
Hmm.
Let it go.
That must create a tremendous amount of healing in people, physical even.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. I think that's what healing is about, removing unwanted conditioning. I call it obscurations. It's obscuring the natural ecstasy.
Wow. And is this workshop something where people live in, or is how many days is it?
It's a whole week. It's 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's finding the soul path through divination, inner alchemy, intuition, simple practices.
Hmm.
We observe signs in nature and in oneself and expand the higher mind and ground through work and movement. Many, many different visualizations, meditations, some art, movement. Sometimes we're wild, sometimes very focused. The whole idea is to break up unwanted patterns.
That sounds wonderful. Do people stay?
I have no place for them to stay. I used to in Mount Shasta. But there's a motel within 15 miles.
Excellent. But it would be nice to be able to go right in and experience your own self for that long without being distracted by the third dimension, eh?
Well, yes, but I think that it's beneficial also to integrate the day's work with the ordinary world.
Hmm.
And vice versa, and, you know, keep that flexibility.
Can we do that?
Sure, because then you become, otherwise it's like you're living in an isolated bubble or mm-hmm. world, you know, that you don't relate to the outside world because people will see the outside world differently as they go in and out of it.
Mm-hmm. And that can actually change a lot of, if we're conscious where we weren't conscious, it can actually change all the interactions around you, can't it?
Exactly. Hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that we're going to make it through this shift and become an amazingly enlightened species?
Well, you know, question. That's up to each person. Every soul makes its own choices.
Hmm.
And as I understand it, you know, some will and some won't.
It's fascinating.
You know, I don't see any way that the entire planet and every human being on it will become enlightened in 4 years.
Oh, darn. but you and I know that a lot of our enlightened journey steps are contagious to a degree anyway.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I don't mean to belittle it. I'm just saying, well, it's up to each person. And they may choose to come into their soul purpose, but it's work. It means sometimes painful transmutations. You know, healing in depth is not necessarily the easiest thing to do, or people would have done it thousands of years ago. They would rather develop technology, but technology doesn't do it.
Right.
Technology is a tool. Mm-hmm. So we still have this work on ourselves to do, mm-hmm. and that's what it's really about. Inner life and the outer life are not separate.
Well, it's sort of fascinating to me that if we're learning to actually create our reality, you know, this is something I'll say fairly often, which probably drives my friends crazy, but it's almost perplexing for me, even as an intuitive, to think that you're going to create a reality, I'm going to create a reality, and it can be very different, yet we can be side by side in the third dimension. Does that make sense?
Yes, but, you know, we also share it in reality.
Hmm.
It's not like it's all just separate bubbles and there's no interconnection. In fact, we become more interconnected and more feeling of oneness with others, the more we remove the obscurations. The more fluid, the more spontaneous, the more open.
Hmm. Well, it's wonderful. Some parts of today are absolutely wonderful, even though some of the dissembling of the physical plane systems are pretty scary for a lot of people, right?
Well, they're scary, but I think that's part of the alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the breakdown of economy systems, losing houses, all kinds of things, including earth changes, is part of the awakening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not apart from it.
It's interesting. I was just listening to our last interview, which was actually wonderful and very interesting for me. But you were saying there something we'd all love to believe, which is that as we shift our consciousness, as we become more one with nature, a lot of the earth changes can slow down, right?
That's true.
Yeah? You still feel that we can consciously interfere with some of it?
Oh, yes. Sending love and light to people, to places, makes a difference. People don't realize the power of their own consciousness and prayers.
Hmm.
Very, very powerful.
I notice you use the term love light a lot in, I love these this co-creation code deck, the divination cards, and you use that term quite a bit in there, and I do like that a lot. Is that what
it's
you're talking about?
It's in the vibrational healing cards mainly.
Mm-hmm.
But the love light is the source realm, and the whole idea is to live according to as much source as possible, because our whole consumer society is oriented towards effects.
Mm-hmm.
And people are being paid for effects. They're encouraged to have effects. But if we turned our attention more to source, we would have many more effects.
How do we turn our attention to source? How do you recommend that?
Well, just a concrete example, instead of buying apples,
mm-hmm.
grow an apple tree.
Hmm. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Because but also prayer, meditation is going into higher dimensions, is returning to source, is going to source. And source is actually, the whole idea is that source flow freely through us, so that we become embodied agents of source.
Hmm.
Then we are open to whatever comes to us. Everything is fresh, not canned.
Oh, that's great. And so is there a collective response to source, meaning, okay, so individuals are doing this now, and many people are growing wiser regarding this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is there a collective impulse to be moving into consciousness of source?
Well, I feel there is, because you see, the closer you get to source, the happier you are.
Mm-hmm.
People want to be happy. Well, they realize that just having a bigger house or a bigger car isn't necessarily going to do it, you know, after they get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the consumerism is part of the government designs to have money flow when war no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we instead put our attention on creating such good products that they don't have to be throwaways,
mm-hmm.
then we would be in greater harmony with source, because nature regenerates. Whatever it is that we create needs to regenerate, not just go dead end and into the dump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I often think if we stop that consumer thing, I wonder what we would, or even when the systems, the economic systems are breaking down, I wonder what amazing things we will create when we're kind of free of the
exactly
chattels of the system, really, or the shackles, yeah?
It's true.
So who are you? Big question, Rowena.
Oh, God. Let's not ask that. I am who I am. I mean, like, just like everyone else.
You have a wonderful, wonderful collection of materials that show your relationship with symbols. Do you want to talk a little bit about your websites and mention again the workshop, but also the books that you've written?
Well, my website is creative-harmonics.org, and also stream-of-wisdom.com. And my work, my various products are all aimed to assist people in living closer to source and nature and discovering more of their soul purpose and enjoying the roots or sources of things, because that is the way of happiness.
Mm.
Happiness, joy, ecstasy, all of these are close to being synonymous words in my view. Mm. And so whatever speaks to you, whatever words speak to you.
I love the Golden Echo, where you have wonderful photos all the way through. It's a wonderful book, everyone. I recommend it. But there, you have this chronologue, photographic essay of how you developed this beautiful building out of a kind of a derelict or out of a dumpy looking.
Well, it was
building.
A ruin. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that, and you did a lot of the building yourself, didn't you?
Oh, I did most of it. Yeah, I had to. See, I somehow it seems to be my destiny to create much out of little, because mm-hmm. I never have a lot of funds, but I do create a lot.
Hmm.
And I didn't have the money to pay anyone to do that work.
Hmm.
So I did the work largely myself with a bunch of rowdy characters. There were about two or three who really were helpful. And
I'm glad they were rowdy. Sometimes that's a good presentation, isn't it?
Yeah,
energy, vibrant.
Well, they just, you know, were paid the minimum wage. And they learned. We all learned a lot. There was a guy who had never even done carpentry. He learned carpentry on the job.
Hmm.
A lot of people who tried to help couldn't make it. I mean, they would just... It's such hard work, but at the same time, you learn a lot.
Hmm.
People, I think, in general, should not try to evade work, but rather work itself helps us regenerate to source.
And do you choose the work that you love, or you choose?
Yes, the work that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Love your work, and the work that you love helps people. If you just lay around, you know, you're really not evolving at all.
And that is the goal, isn't it? That's a prime soul purpose. So when you were very young, Did you know you had to be different? Did you know you had to be artistic? Did you know you had to work with your soul?
I knew
purpose?
That I enjoyed art, yes, mm-hmm. and I knew that I loved nature, as I've said in more than one place. When I was in the second grade, I capitalized those two words, art and nature, and the teacher always made it wrong, but it was right. Nature and art were primary, and I knew that at a very early age. It's not that I knew I was different, that I didn't think about that. Mm-hmm. I just was what I was, you know. I loved what I loved, and that's it.
But a lot of people don't have that courage and strength and need to be broken out of some kind of mold, don't they?
Well, this has to do with following your intrinsic joy.
Mm-hmm.
If they follow their intrinsic joy from a very early age, it's all very clear. You don't have to get all conditioned and then have to heal out of it and pay a lot of money to get help, to get rescued, and all kinds of complicated things.
You know, I'm fascinated lately, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I'm fascinated by seniors who, some of them who are trapped in these little dying places, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel... in our society that we've encouraged, that they know that they're learning something, that there's something empowering going on, maybe not on the outside, but on the inside.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating, it's kind of a conundrum for me, and I guess I'll do some
studying.
Well,
older people are learning things or they would die. Mm-hmm. You know, they are learning things.
But do you think they can break out?
Inward. What?
Do you think they can break out and find that passion for their own journey, even if they only have, like, some of their senses left and so on? Do you think we can encourage
inwardly,
that?
Inwardly, sometimes people do, even on their deathbed, you know, really loosen up. And basically because they start releasing as we head towards so-called death, that transition, we have to release stuff. And that releasing, I mean, both goods and aims and all kinds of things. So that releasing helps open things up, open things to the truth, to the inner light, to the love light.
So I often think it isn't about living a long, long, long time. It's about releasing from the conventions.
That's right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd sure love to get to the little kids and the older people.
Uh-huh.
So
well,
what,
good.
Yeah, what's next for you? What are you creating right now? Besides your workshop, which I think is going to be pretty, effective.
Well, I think I should give people my phone number in case they're interested. 505-286-2714. Because this will be a unique opportunity. I only give 1 week long a year, and this is it for 2009.
Hmm.
And it's surrendering to Source, because Source is the potential of everything. And I don't mean by surrendering giving up. I'm talking about surrendering our addictive will.
So you're saying that the impulses of potential come through us if we get out of the way? Or?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where is this?
This is in Edgewood, New Mexico, which is east mountains of Albuquerque, or east of Albuquerque.
There's a lot of healing energy in that part of the world, isn't
there? It's a beautiful area, and lots of trees. And I have a sauna, sweat lodge, that's a place where prayer and visualization can happen. The idea is to release, the outworn, and empower people through discovering their soul purpose that naturally comes when we're playful, we're serious, we're not serious. In other words, many different modalities are used to help bring about the depths of oneself.
It sounds so wonderful. So people can find out more about it on creative-harmonics.org.
Without the hyphen, they'll never get there.
Yeah. The meticulous computer. Rowena, well, I think it's very exciting, and we're going to repeat your phone number, and then I want to ask you something else. Do you want to repeat your phone number for
505-286-2714.
I sure recommend that. I can't do it right now, but one of these years I am going to come down and do that. Is it true that you do all of your own publishing, all your own books?
Well, again, yes, I do. I love it's easy for me to work with Photoshop and InDesign and all of that. In other words, to design a book. And I have a huge amount of visuals, so it's easy to do book covers and illustrations and
But it's fascinating because a lot of people in our age category don't really want to get into all that technology, right?
Well, since I've done it, I don't know. When was that? In the early 80s, I had an old IBM. You know, I've just always been into computers. I don't so much love computers, but I have an aim, and that is to communicate.
But you're saying it's a love, and it's part of your journey to do this communication, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and very much so.
So,
I mean, I'd be very happy if I didn't also need to do it. I know it sounds strange, but I'd rather just transmit directly to people's hearts.
Well, maybe
without all the books and communication and images and so forth.
You know, something funny is I often think that the internet is training wheels for our...
It is.
Yes. So you're doing it.
All of technology is training wheels.
Isn't that great? So ultimately they can pull away the technology and we'll be able to communicate with our hearts
with
our mind.
Directly. And I know that's coming. That's part of the new earth.
So part of
my work is the three divination decks. people feel, well, what's divination? Well, it means to divine, to know. It's an oracle. And I know people are familiar sometimes with tarot, but none of these are tarot. They're cosmic overviews made into cards so that people can participate and interact with symbols and patterns that are geared into a cosmic grid or matrix that relates to the how the universe is ordered. And that's why they work.
So then they work by you do a layout for on behalf of yourself, for example, and get a reflection, a multidimensional reflection?
Yes.
Where do you get these? Where do you get the information that you put on the cards?
Well, that's what I say. That's just direct attunement.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of my job. I just can do that.
Wow.
I can tune in to particular archetypes, symbols, qualities, and bring them into a form. That's just what I do.
And understand their message?
Yeah.
Or messages and so on. Have you always been able to do that?
I don't know what always means, you know.
Beyond time and space. Now, I was thinking.
I've been doing divination type things since the early 80s.
Mm.
So that's not even in this lifetime forever. But that doesn't mean that I haven't been able to tune into the qualities inherent in my experience. And naturally, there was a lot of accumulation before I actually started making divination decks. I think it's a good method for people because it's participatory.
Mm-hmm. And actually, if one sits with a card, it interacts with.
Yeah, it resonates. It resonates with the soul.
And so that it can.
It can speak to the soul and the mind and the heart if people are open.
And
if they're not open, it's meaningless.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. So you have three divination card decks, eh?
Yeah, Gaia Matrix Oracle is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is probably the most comprehensive. But it was out in 1990, and it ran through the 90s. And it's not even used as much now. It's interesting.
Mm.
It's more complex than the others. Then there's the vibrational healing cards, which are very popular.
Mm-hmm.
They're three-dimensional sacred geometry designs in color with simple readings, and the co-creation code deck, which is the most recent, and that's based on harmonics and a cosmology of multiple realms. The point is that all of these are resonant with higher dimensional grids that is how and why. It's like quantum physics. It has a non-local effect.
Hmm.
Somebody in Australia can pick a card, and it has a direct relationship with their particular situation through this cosmic grid. It isn't something that I do. What I do is create, you know, and facilitate the cosmic scheme, but actually it's already exists, and I just bring it into form.
And it can activate someone's awakening, can it?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow, I think that's wonderful. Well, our time is coming to a close, and I always love talking to you, Rowena. I think this is our third discussion, and it's...
Yes, I enjoy it too, Veronica, and I appreciate the opportunity.
It's a real treat for me, so thank you very much. So it's creative-harmonics.org for everyone. And read into my favorite section today, anyway, was the Streams of Wisdom. I really enjoyed that section.
Yes, well, that's its own website, stream-of-wisdom.com.
I love that concept, and I'm so in agreement.
Well,
that
there are various people who are taking that as courses, you know, they're courses.
Well, maybe I should do that too, so. But bless your heart, and thank you so much for being a wonderful paradigm shifter this time on our planet.
Oh, bless you.
All right,
dear. Marina,
thank
Bye-bye.
You.